Hello everyone, this is Beverly Tomasian. Welcome to our special boot camp workshop. Where we ended up last time is we had a insulin and pattern management presentation and we went for an hour and a half, but it just felt like there was some more information we wanted to cover and some more reinforcement of key points. So we'd like to spend maybe an hour or so today going over some of those questions. I've actually revised the questions and made some new ones so you could keep practicing, because I think one of the best ways to decrease anxiety and increase confidence is through test taking and sample questions. And then after a while you go, oh yeah, I get this concept. So it's a lot of concepts. I think that's the difficult part. And it may be out of your comfort zone in some ways. So it really depends on your profession and what your daily job looks like. Some of you may do insulin and pattern management all the time, and others of you may do it on occasion. So, you know, we all have a wide breadth of experience and we do different jobs. And so we need just to consider that. And so wherever you don't do much of, it's less familiar. And I would encourage you, if you can, to hang out with your partners who do this all the time. If you know a diabetes educator who does a lot of insulin pattern management, if you could hang out with them and just say, hey, can I just hang out with you for the day? A great learning experience. Okay, so Rebecca wants me to clarify any questions the exam will involve regarding prescribing. I can do it as an NP, but how will the exam ask about this? Okay, great question. So the exam assumes we don't prescribe. So we do not have prescriptive authority, but we are consultants to prescribers. And so we would have the role of letting our prescribers know our suggestions. And that's totally within the CDE framework to say, you know what, doctor or you know, nurse practitioner, colleague of mine, I think we need to adjust the insulin in this way. And that is what a CDE can is definitely, that's what our job description entails, really, is to evaluate patterns, evaluate insulin therapy, evaluate medication therapy, evaluate medical nutrition and exercise therapy, and make suggestions back to providers. So in that way, we serve a consulting role. And so the CDE does not, generally would not, we would not assume they have prescriptive authority, but we would assume they would be familiar enough with medications to make suggestions. Absolutely. So when you sit for this exam, if there's nurse practitioners or PAs or MDs or anyone who's, you know, doing more medical management, you want to put on your education hat for this exam. This exam really does look at how do you help people make behavior change, lifestyle change? How do you light the fire within them? How do you empower them? And so we may have to know about medications for blood pressure or lipids or, you know, blood sugars, insulin, oral meds, but we're not managing the patient. We're consultants to the providers. Okay, somebody else has a question. Okay, oh, Rebecca just said great. You're welcome, Rebecca. It's a great question. So I'm thinking if one person has that question, some other people do. Let's just talk a little bit more about this topic, because I've been teaching this program for over 16 years, and usually I do it live, and so it is a little bit more difficult for me to do it through a webcast because I can't see your faces, and I, you know, when I do a presentation, I'm interacting with the audience and I'm looking at them, so I have a disadvantage where I can't see you. The only way I see you is through the polls, and so I'm going to ask you some more poll questions today, but also at the end, I'm going to ask you, I have a little survey I would like you to complete, just to let me know what's working, what's helping you with this webcast, and how can we make it better. So I really, really appreciate you taking the time to help me improve, because, you know, we're all works in progress, and I know there's always ways that I can do things better, and I'm very humble that way, and I appreciate feedback, especially, you know, feedback that helps me improve things is really great for me. So I'll get to that in a minute. But getting ready for the exam, insulin medications, you want to make sure you download our insulin medication pocket card. So that's on our website. You might want to make flashcards. If this is a real anxiety topic for you, that when you think about medications, you know, your heart starts beating quickly. I understand that. So if that's the case, you might want to make flashcards. Writing the flashcards will help you remember it, and then just walking around and practicing the information. And then looking at your patient's blood glucose patterns, thinking about needed adjustments. So take this knowledge and apply it to your job setting. wow, it really will help elucidate this information. And I mean, I've looked at thousands and thousands of blood glucose patterns, and I've done it so much now, just things pop out to me. So there's repetition that's needed to really acquire the skill set. So you need knowledge plus repetition plus practice. It's just, you know, a lot of what we do as diabetes educators is on the job training. So be real gentle with yourself, be a gentle coach. And, you know, just learn as much as you can along the way. And then you might ask me about the exam. How many questions do they have on this insulin pattern management on the exam? I will tell you, sometimes people say to me they hardly had any questions on insulin and pattern management. And sometimes they'll say there was a ton of questions. So each exam is different. But generally I would say these are higher level questions, so there's not going to be as many of these types of questions. But if there are, I want you to be prepared for them. And really, most importantly, why we're going over insulin and pattern management. And so this is really important information for the exam and your clinical practice. So the more you know about this, the more comfortable you are, the better diabetes education service you provide when working with your patients and consulting with providers. So the other thing I was going to mention here is the Art and Science book. If you have the Art and Science book, there's a few chapters on medications. I think they're really well written, and they're worth a look. So that would be another place to get some more information. Let's see. Oh, and then I just went to the CDE exam outline, which I would encourage you always to take a look at to see where am I at, how comfortable am I with these different areas. And medication management appears in different areas. Under assessment, you'll see it. And previous and current medication regime, medication doses, prescription, all that. Treatment and fear myths, hyperglycemia, needles, weight gain, substance abuse, all that. So that's part of our assessment. Then under pharmacologic management, so this is under the intervention side, we need to know the ADA and the AACE guidelines, which I've been going over. Sorry. Sometimes the thing just has a mind of its own here. And medication, insulin, orals, and injectables, side effects, administration, delivery devices, medication adjustment. And it does say here interactions. There's not a ton of questions on interactions, but if you have the Art and Science book, they do talk about that. So you want to be familiar with some, you know, basic interactions, but I wouldn't make a big deal of that. Just have some familiarity. And then clinical practice application again, apply inpatient standards and apply outpatient standards. So we need to have a general understanding of medications and the goals of care, management of, you know, blood glucose, what's causing what. And here I am on my treadmill desk. So I do want to say when I write these PowerPoint presentations or do your tests, I'm on my treadmill desk and I've already got 6 miles this morning getting ready for today. So, I don't know, I just thought I'd share that with you because I have a sit-down job, so I'm always trying to get moving. But as far as this workshop, it will be posted on Session 3 in the Related Materials section. So this will just be a WMV file. I'll put it in Section 3 along with the handout, so Session 3 of the boot camp. And I did mention earlier that I wrote a little survey when the webcast is completed. It's just 3 questions, and it's essay style. If you could give me any feedback, how to make this program better, what's working for you, and just, you know, feedback that would help me for next time to provide the best service possible. I really want to provide a great service for all of you because I believe in you, and I believe in the importance of diabetes educators, and I believe in this epidemic is getting bigger and bigger. So whatever we can do to reach out in our communities, at our workplace, at our family reunions to say, hey, guys, this is a big deal. We need to take charge here. I want to help be a part of that movement. Okay, so I did send out the handouts ahead of time on Friday. So I think that's one thing I've learned is that I'm going to send the handouts out early with the poll questions so you have a minute to take a look at the poll questions and really think through them. Because I think it's kind of hard just looking at the poll question at that moment and really calculating information out. So always have, you know, when you take the exam, there might be some mathematical calculations involved. So make sure you have your pen and paper available. But let's take a look at this first poll question. Mary takes 6 units of Lispro Humalog before dinner. What blood glucose result reflects that it was the right dose? Is it the morning blood glucose of 97, 1 hour post-dinner blood glucose of 189, a before-dinner blood glucose of 102, or a 2-hour post-dinner blood glucose of 178. So what I'm going to do right now is launch the poll. All right, thanks for voting, everyone. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this poll and share your answers. So 100% of you chose 2-hour post-dinner of 178. All right, you guys are on fire already. First poll looking good. So let's just go over this together. So 6 units of Humalog before dinner. We know that it's the bedtime blood sugar that reflects how well Humalog before dinner works. So that's an important concept. If you give a bolus insulin before dinner, when does it affect blood sugar? So that you'll just need to know for pattern management. And so we're going to look now at the 2-hour post-dinner. So we've already eliminated 2 wrong answers right off the bat because we don't really care about before breakfast. That doesn't really give us information. But 1 hour post-dinner, okay, so here's one potential right answer. But we know the post-dinner blood glucose goal is less than 180. So this is 189. So we know that's wrong. And we know that if you give 6 units of Humalog before dinner, we're not going to choose C because that's before dinner blood sugar. That would not reflect the efficacy. But D is the right answer. 2-hour post-dinner blood glucose of 178 because the 2-hour post-meal goal is less than 180. Okay, great job, you guys. Let's do another one. Calvin takes 5 units before regular insulin before breakfast and dinner and 18 units of Lantus at bedtime. His morning blood sugars range from 143 to 172. What is the best action? Are we going to increase the dinner regular to 6 units? Are we going to decrease the Lantus at bedtime by 2 units? Are we going to increase Lantus dose at bedtime? Or are we going to evaluate him for Somogyi effect? So let me get to that poll. Looks like you guys did some pre-study this weekend. Thank you. So I'm just going to point out again, we're looking for best answer. And they have a lot of questions like this on the exam where 2 of them could possibly be right, but 1 stands out as the better answer. Okay, take 1 more second to vote. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. Thank you, everyone. Let's go over this together because we had a lot of variability in our answers. So let's just take this nice and slow. Okay, Calvin takes 5 units of regular insulin before breakfast and dinner and 18 units of Lantus at bedtime. So they're giving you some information here. His AM blood glucose ranges from 143 to 172. We don't know anything about his other blood sugars. We don't know anything about his A1C. All we know is what insulin he takes and what his blood sugars are in the morning. That's all we know. And I do want to say it doesn't even mention anything about him getting shaky at night or sweaty at night or he wakes up hungry or he wakes up with headaches. It doesn't mention anything about that. And so I just want to point out really something super important about this exam. Just Use the information you have at hand. Don't read anything into it. Don't add anything into it. Don't put your patient experience in it. just look at the question for what it is. So I think a lot of you I know are like super achievers, and it's easy to read more into a question than what's in it. So just take it for what it gives you, and that's it. Nothing more, nothing less, and then move on to the answer. So the first thing we want to do is look for wrong answers. So we're on the hunt. We want to find out, why is his morning blood glucose 143 to 172? We know the goal is less than 130, 70 to 130. So what's the best action? So some of you chose this. Increase dinner regular insulin by 6 units. So if we increase the dinner regular, we're going to bring bedtime down, but we don't know if that will help lower morning blood sugar, because we always have to think, which insulin lowers morning blood sugar? There's only one answer, and that's basal insulin. Basal insulin is responsible for morning blood sugar. So we know just from this question that Lantus has to be involved in the answer, because basal always affects morning blood sugar. Okay, so A is not the right answer. B, decrease Lantus by 2 units at bedtime. Okay, now if his blood sugars are above target at bedtime, we would not decrease the Lantus dose, because that would even make those blood sugars go higher. I know what some of you are thinking. What if he's got Somogyi? What if he's getting low in the middle of the night? But this question does not even bring that up as a possibility, because it doesn't talk about that. So that is the wrong answer. B is the wrong answer. C, increase Lantus dose at bedtime. It doesn't say by how much, but this is an absolutely correct answer, because his morning blood sugars are high. He's on 18 units of Lantus. What is the best action? We know that C would be the right answer, because it would bring those blood sugars down to target. So I'm going with C, but I'm going to check out D to see if D has any merit. Evaluate him for Somogyi effect. So I will tell you the truth. I put that in there as a juicy answer. I wanted to kind of distract you from the right answer, because I know that's what the test writers do. But this is not the right answer, because what if we did evaluate him for Somogyi? You know, then what? That's not the best answer. The best answer is we recommend to the provider, could we increase the bedtime dose of Lantus? So you could argue with me, well, you know, we should see if he's getting low in the middle of the night, and then see if that's really an issue causing his blood sugars to go high. But again, because in this question, I don't give you any details about that's sweaty and shaky put together. It's not the right answer. So again, the best answer is C. I just want to show you what you chose. So about 60% of you chose the right answer, C. So great job. If you didn't choose the right answer, like I always say, it's okay. It's just giving you feedback about your test-taking style. And I think a lot about this exam, I'm going to go ahead and hide it, looks at how are you as a test taker. And it's kind of interesting, the psychology behind test taking. You know, I've talked about this already, but I'll bring it up again, just to look at the question, take what's there, don't add anything in. Let's go to the next one. And this is a calculation of insulin dose. And I have had questions similar to this, so I wanted to put this in here. Sarah takes 15 units of Lispro before breakfast and lunch and 20 units of dinner. How many days would one vial last? Would it last 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, or 22 days? Now I'm going to go ahead and launch that and see what you all choose. Okay, this might be a good time to get out a pen and pencil. And as you know, I'll just give you one more hint. There's 1,000 units in a vial of insulin. So do you need to know that for the exam? Yeah, you need to know that one bottle of insulin has 1,000 units. take a few more seconds. Okay, let's go ahead and close this poll. All right, so, you know, I was thinking about this the other day, that there's a lot of math in diabetes, a lot of, especially when you're doing carb counting or just, you know, insulin. There's a lot of math involved. Okay, let's do this together. Sarah takes 15 units of Lispro before breakfast and lunch. So that's 15 plus 15 is 30 units. She takes 15 before breakfast, 15 at lunch is 30, plus 20 at dinner. That's 50 units. She takes 50 units of Lispro a day. We know that there's 1,000 units in a vial. So 50 goes into 1,000 20 times. So a vial of insulin would last 20 days. So I'm going to go ahead and share that. You guys are really on fire. 90% of you chose that. So great job. And if you didn't get that right, all I did with actually these poll questions is I manipulated the poll question. I put different numbers in there. You could do the same thing for yourself. And just practice different math equations and see what you would come up with and double check that. Okay, let's see what else I have. Oh, the 50-50 rule. So we were talking about this, and you might say, well, they ask you to calculate, you know, insulin dose for a patient on the 50-50 rule. No, they're not going to ask you to calculate that on the exam. But you just need to be familiar with what it is. It's called 50-50. It's called basal bolus dosing. And basically what it says is that if you take the body weight times 0.5 kilograms, it gives you the total insulin dose required a day, 25 units. And then half of that is basal, which, you know, I said 13 here because I assign a little bit more to the basal dose because it's safer. Basal insulin doesn't cause as much hypoglycemia, so we give a little bit more basal if it's not an even number. And then 12 units of bolus. And then the bolus you have to divide by 3 meals. So 12 divided by 3 is 4 units each meal. So what I'd like to do now is I'm giving you a new formula. I want you to calculate for a person who weighs 100 kilograms, how much insulin would they need a day? What would be their basal dose? And what would be their bolus dose? So take a few minutes to think about that. And then we'll do a poll to see how you're doing. They're using it in hospitals now. I use it a lot when I'm, you know, trying to figure out what a patient needs as far as insulin, a good starting dose. This is such a handy formula to have because as patients come in to see me in all these wacky insulin regimens, and I can use this formula to see what should they be on if I was thinking like a pancreas. What would the pancreas be doing? Is this type 1 diabetes? So that's a great question. Do we use this formula for type 1 or type 2s? Yeah, there's a range. Like I showed you on the last slide, we go from 0.3 to 1 unit of insulin per kilogram per day. So our leaner, thinner type 1s, we're definitely going to start 0.3. And our heavier type 2s, you know, they may need up to 1 unit a day. But this is kind of 1 unit of insulin per kilogram total daily dose. So everybody's different, but this is kind of a medium starting ground for most people. And I kind of look at their body weight to adjust up or down. Okay, so what I did, I tried to formulate this in a poll question. So this is the same patient. She weighs 100 kilograms. And according to the basal bolus rule, how much would her basal rate be, and what would her per meal bolus be? Which answer would represent the right answer? All right, you guys are on fire today. Monday is a good day. We're looking really good. Making it happen here. All Okay. Take a few more seconds to let you vote. So just remember, her body weight is 100 kilograms. All right, I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. Thank you, everyone, for voting. And so, as I mentioned, this won't be on the exam, but it's just they might mention it, like using the basal bolus rule or using a 50-50 rule, something like that. They might allude to it. So you just want to know what it is. So here's the right answer. So 100 times 0.5 is 50 units of insulin a day. Half of that is 25, so you might do glargine once a day, or if you split it up, you might do 12 units twice a day. And then the bolus dose is the other 25, so that would be 8 units, well, per meal. And you could say, well, 8 times 3 is 24, there's one left over. And so if there's one left over, you would just give 9 before the meal where they have the highest post-meal blood sugar. And so I hope that made sense. So usually we'll just, you know, round it down and go 8, 8, 8. But you could use 9 at a time when they're really having high post-meal blood sugars. That would when you would assign the 9 units at that meal. I just want to share your results here. 80% of you chose the right answer. Others chose different answers. But you can see looking here at this math, how we did it, that the right answer is 25 of basal, 25 of bolus with 8 at each meal. Let me see. Some people had a question. Oh, okay. Oh, for MPH, she's asking, should we round up or down 12.5? And generally, we would round up. But what if I have a patient, I'm kind of worried about them getting low blood sugar? You know, I might round down. So it's really individualized per patient. So we have to look at our patients and see what's going on with them. Okay, let me keep going here. So if we look at bolus basics, when we use bolus insulin, we use it for several things. We use it to cover for prandial. Some people use the word prandial, which just means food, or carbohydrate coverage. And we want to match the insulin to cover carbohydrates. And 1 unit for 15 is a common starting point. The correction bolus targets high blood sugar. So it says, well, 1 unit of insulin will drop the blood sugar anywhere from 30 to 50 points. And that varies on body weight. In a heavier person, 1 unit might drop the blood sugar 30 points. On a thinner patient, it might drop at 50 points. So it just varies. And the test will never ask you to calculate insulin sensitivity or say what will be the right dose for this patient, you know, based on coverage for hyperglycemia. No. On the test, they will always give you this data. I put that in red. So they'll give you the data and give you case studies that you have to apply this information to. And so let's just look at this gal one more time. She takes 1 unit for every 15 grams of carbohydrate, and she's going to eat 60 grams. So we have lemon chicken, which is no carbohydrate. So you could argue and say, well, Bev, lemon chicken, that has that sweet and sour sauce, right? But look, there's no carbohydrate assigned next to it. So on the exam, they might give you samples of food, and they might put carbohydrate next to it, or they may not. But if it doesn't have it, like this one has it, we know it's 45 grams. So just go with that. Asparagus is a vegetable. There is some carb involved, but it wasn't enough to qualify here. There's no carbohydrate attached to it. So use what you have in the question. And then dinner roll, 15 grams. So this person had 60 grams of carb, and she takes 1 unit for every 15, so she would need 4 units of insulin. But now we also have to consider that her starting blood sugar is 165, so she's above her target. And so how do we adjust this carbohydrate ratio? Well, we look at how much am I going to eat, what is my insulin dose for this amount, and should I lower the dose because I plan to be very active or recently active or my blood sugar is low. And we did look at this chart that if the blood sugar is less than 70, we subtract a unit, even to cover carbs to protect against hypoglycemia. Again, on the exam, they would give you this chart and give you this information. You just would have to apply it to this question. So let's do another of these poll questions. And I do want to clarify that this patient I'm going to give you in this example is using insulin injections. They're not on an insulin pump. So the dose we come up with is different on an insulin injection. Because if you're using a syringe, you can't go 0.2, 0.3. You have to round up or round down. If you're using an insulin pump, you can get exactly the amount based on the carbohydrate. But this patient, and this, I'm going to clarify, I'm using syringes to inject insulin. So they take one unit for every 15 grams of carb. Here's a meal, one small potato, barbecue chicken wings, one cup regular milk, one cup of Jell-O, a third of a cup of beans, and sugar-free iced tea. Look at their blood glucose, right on target, 118. And I did add to your resource list a diabetes exchange list. We'll be going over that more in the nutrition section, but I wanted to give you a resource where you could look up, you know, what does this mean? Like, what is one serving of carbohydrate? And you may ask me, Bev, do I need to memorize the entire diabetes exchange list? No, but you should be really familiar with the most common types of foods and what a serving of beans, pasta, rice are, you know, and fruit and so forth, because those are common questions. I'm not a dietitian, but when my patients come in, I look at their food meal plan. I need to be able to figure out how much carb are they eating per meal. So that's part of the scope of a CDE. So if you're a dietitian, you're like, this is a no-brainer. But for non-dietitians, this is we have to assimilate this information somehow. So what is the right answer? 4 units, 5.7, 3.8, or 6? I'm going to go ahead and launch a poll. Alana wants to know if it's regular Jell-O. Yes, it is regular Jell-O. It is not diet Jell-O. It is regular Jell-O. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. When patients are in the hospital and they're clear liquid diet and they have diabetes, they give them regular Jell-O. Why? Because they need calories, clear liquid. So people with diabetes can eat regular Jell-O. It's okay. I mean, I'm not encouraging them to do it, but sometimes you need some regular Jell-O. On the iced tea, I put SF. It doesn't stand for San Francisco. It stands for sugar-free iced tea. Okay, take a few more seconds to vote. I'm going to go ahead and close this poll. Okay. Let's take a look here at the right answer. So what I got here was meal is one small potato. So I just put down here, I wrote down just like you would do, just how many grams of carb that is. A small potato is 15 grams. Barbecued chicken wing is nothing. It's a protein. You could say, well, there's chicken sauce on it. I mean, barbecue sauce, but we really don't count that unless there's like a cup of it or something. So one cup of regular milk. This is really important. On the exchange list, milk is 12 grams of carbohydrate. And so we have 15 for the potato, 12 for the milk, and then we have a cup of Jell-O, which is 15 grams, another 15 grams, so a half a cup of Jell-O, a half a cup of juice, a small piece of fruit, those are all 15 grams, and then beans, a third of a cup of beans is 15 grams. So we have 57 grams in total. So if we have 57 grams of carbohydrate and we take one unit for every 15, so you could round up in your mind and go, okay, 60 grams divided by 15 is 4, or you could do precisely and know that 57 divided by 15 is 3.8 units. But if I'm using a syringe, I can't give myself 3.8 units. I have to round up to 4 units. So the right answer is 4 units. 4 units. Very important. So I think some of you chose 5.7 units because you were thinking, the patient uses one unit of Humalog for every 10 grams. It doesn't say that. It says one unit of Humalog for every 15 grams. So really read it super carefully. when you're looking at this. It's very, very important to do that. How many units is per grams of carb? Look at that first. Calculate how many grams of carb they're going to have. So you take the grams of carb, divide it by the ratio, which is one unit for every 15, to get your total insulin dose to cover carbs. So I want to share this with you, how you all did. You're doing great. 50% of you got it right. If you didn't, just keep practicing this, you know, as much as you can. That'll be really helpful. Okay, let me see any questions I have. Okay, so Mary says, well, if you use a one-third syringe in pediatrics, it will let you get to 3.8. So, Mary, you have a great point, but nowhere in this question did they say the kid is a pediatric. So you bring up a really great point, because you may want to read into this. Don't read into that. If they said, this is a kid, you know, pediatric on insulin, he's using a special syringe, then you would have that information, but it doesn't even mention that at all. So use what you have in front of you is what my main suggestion here is. So as we go through this, I'm hoping that you're feeling more calm, because you're learning strategies on how to succeed with the exam. And that's the main goal, just strategies, how to think through it, and how to get to the right answer. And, of course, even more important than that is just bringing this to our clinical practice. Let's go over Cindy again. Cindy is trying to carb count and adjust her insulin, but is still having trouble. She weighs 60 kilograms. So let's just do a quick calculation in our head. 60 kilograms times 0.5 is 30 units of insulin a day. That's her total daily dose, 30. And then half of that would be basal. So half of 30 is 15. So her basal dose is 15. We know that her pre-meal target is 120, her post-meal goal is less than 180, and her carb ratio is right here. And then we have this correction factor. Now, there's this thing called the 1700 rule, and we use this when we're trying to figure out insulin sensitivity for people on insulin analogs, like the Lispro, Novolog, Apidra. They're not going to ask you to calculate this out. They just might mention something like, patient uses the 1700 rule. So I'm just going to tell you what that means, and it's just based on a logarithmic formula that was developed. And so you'll never have to calculate this. They'll give you the information, but they might address it. So I just want to tell you what the 1700 rule is. It says 1700 divided by the total daily dose of insulin gives you insulin sensitivity. So you might say, can I use this with my patients? You could. Type 2s, it's not as accurate. Type 1, it's a little more accurate. And then, so in this example, a patient's on 30 units a day. So you take 1,700 divided by 30, that's her total daily dose, equals 56. So we know one unit drops her blood glucose 56 points. That's how we came up with that number. You won't be asked to calculate that, but they might allude to it just like I did. So this number, 55, I know it says 56 here. Usually, you know, we're going to get to a more even number for calculation in your mind. So that's where the 55 came from. So I hope that answers that question. I don't want you guys to stress out about that. Do not stress out about insulin sensitivity rule. And John asked a question. He said, well, do they use there's a 1500 rule too? We do use that for regular insulin. But again, they would not ask you to calculate it. They might just mention it. Okay. So I don't want it to make it more confusing. I'm trying to clarify and help it be less confusing. But anyway, so Cindy made a chart based on her insulin sensitivity. Less than 70, she subtracts the unit, 70 to 120. She's on target. If she's above 120, she starts adding a unit for every 55 above her target of 120. Let's just do, this is a different patient, so I'm just changing gears for a second here to give us some more practice. Bob's correction scale is one unit for every 50 above his target of 120. His blood glucose right now is 320. How much correction insulin would he need? 4 units? 5 units? C, he needs to count his carbs first. Or D, depends on his activity. So let me go ahead and launch that poll so you all can vote. Oh, okay. Alana's asking an interesting question. She says, with Cindy, if she gave 1 unit when her blood glucose was 120, that would drop her to 65. Isn't that too low? Well, Alana, she would just be giving her insulin with food. So that's insulin. You give insulin, eat food. So it wouldn't drop her too low. It would just cover for the carb. I think I answered that question. Oh, was that the correction ratio? Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, Alana, I'm with you now. So you're saying if she gave herself that 1 unit, it might bring her blood sugar lower than she needed. But she usually wouldn't give that correction insulin unless she was eating something. So the correction scale is usually associated with a bolus scale for carbohydrates. So the two go together unless you're on a pump. And if you're on a pump, you might do a little bit differently. But you're right, there's a lot of negotiations and trial and error involved in this. Okay, good. I hope I answered your question. Yeah, so this correction scale is usually associated with food. Okay, anyways, let's get back to this one. You guys are rocking it. Bob's correction scale, 4 units is what most of you chose. And 95% of you chose that. So great job, team. How did you get there? Well, let's see. I think I wrote out the formula here so you guys could see it. His blood glucose is 320. His target is 120. Okay, so first we have to think, how high is he above his target? And that's what people with diabetes do all the time. His blood sugar is 320. His target is 120. He's 200 above target. He takes 1 unit for every 50 above target. So 200, I made a typo, sorry. 200 divided by 50 equals 4. So it should be 4 units, which is a correct answer. And you guys did great on that one. Okay, I'm just going to ask this question. I hope you all had a chance to look over the white paper. There's a white paper on insulin pump therapy. It's a great paper. There are questions on the insulin pump, and it's a well-written white paper. And I pulled out some questions. I made these questions up, but I made these questions up based on previous exams I've had where they've asked about these types of indications. Who should we advise to start on insulin pumps? And I will be honest with you, it's changed over the years. So I read that white paper and I was pretty excited about it because they've really opened their mind about who should be on pumps. So which of the following, I'm just going to launch this one, is a lifestyle indication for insulin pump use? Stable schedule, limited travel, need for structure, or varied work shifts. Okay. Which of the following is a lifestyle indication for pump use? Who would really benefit from an insulin pump where they deliver basal insulin 24 hours a day? So they might deliver, 0.5 units of insulin per hour. They might actually crank it up around 4 a.m. to cover for the dawn phenomena, which is when you release cortisol and epinephrine and growth hormone 4 in the morning. So you might bump it up to 0.6 units an hour. And then you might lower it when you're out exercising your basal rate. So insulin pump. And then every time you eat, you calculate how much carbohydrates you're going to eat and what your blood sugar is at that moment. And you cover for carbs and hyperglycemia. And so you can do very specific insulin dosing, which is really nice. And as you know, the site needs to be changed every 72 hours. And they need to know if their pump isn't working or they don't think they're getting insulin, their blood sugars are up, they need a backup plan, which is insulin injections. Really important. Okay, so 71% of you have voted. I'm going to go ahead and close this and share your results. Okay, so 15% of you chose stable schedule. And actually, that is not the right answer because this pump, what indication? it's people with varied work shift is one of the best indications for people, because they don't need this. The pump is really to be used for people with erratic schedules, for people who are flexible, for people who can do things on the fly. That's a great pump indication, because the pump really allows for you for a lot of life changes and variability. If you work night shift or day shift, or if you travel a lot, it's a great tool to help you. So of all the different indications to use the pump, D is the right one. Varied work shifts is the right answer. So I would just, if you didn't get that right, it's okay, because these other answers are very tempting. But I would just go ahead and read that white paper and see what they talk about as far as who are really great people that are a match for this insulin pump. Okay, let's do, we're back to Cindy again. So she's that gal who takes one unit of insulin for every 55, and her target blood glucose is 120. So I would like you to fill in the blanks. Her blood glucose before lunch is 285. She plans to eat 75 grams of carbohydrate. So what I want to know now is, what is her total dose of Humalog that she'll need based on this? So that's kind of fill in the blanks. I'll just take a few minutes on this. Okay, so you may ask me, will they ask me to do this in the exam? No, they're not going to ask you to fill in the blanks or calculate this, but it's just good to know, just kind of get you in the mindset of thinking about adjusting for carbohydrates and adjusting for blood sugar using prandial insulin and using correction scale or correction insulin to get blood sugar to target. So let's go over this together. So her blood sugar is 285 and her target's 120. So 285 minus her target of 120 tells us she's 165 over target. And then we say, well, she's 165 over target and she takes one unit for every 55 over target. How much correction insulin does she need? Well, you take 165 divided by 55 equals 3 units. And then she's going to have 75 grams of carb, and we know that she takes one unit for every 15 grams of carb. So based on this, we take 75 divided by 15, she'll need 5 units. So she needs 3 units to cover for hyperglycemia and 5 units to cover for carbs. So she'll need 8 units of insulin. And so, you know, that again, that's just kind of being comfortable with math and formulating the question right. And then this question I had in here, really not as a hard and there's no hard and fast answer. It was more of a discussion piece. So some of you were saying, well, how much carb is this? And I just want to say, I was really trying to bring up this case study as a point that it's really hard to figure out how much carbs you're eating sometimes. And even for, you know, dietitians working on this all the time and for people living with diabetes all the time, it's hard sometimes to determine how much carbohydrate is in this particular food. So they become real great detectives at weighing things, at eating more consistent food where they know how it's going to affect their blood sugar. And sometimes they may just choose food because they want it. And sometimes they just have to make their best guess. So diabetes isn't easy to manage. And I want to just go over this in the next slide here, what I came up with, and see if it matches what you came up with. I said a slice of cold pizza, I gave 30 grams of carbohydrate for that. And then I said a half a cup of applesauce. I know that. That's, you know, a half a cup of applesauce is 15 grams. So I just guessed 45 grams. I don't know how big the pizza is. I'm just kind of doing a guesstimate. So would you, and so again, let me just say you won't be asked to do this on the exam, but I was just using it as, you know, to kind of get our brains flowing. Like, I don't know, brain gymnastics to think about this would be a better way of putting it. Okay, so 3 units for the 45 grams, and then she's above her target, right? She's 173. Her target's 120. She's about 50 above her target, so she took 4 units total, one for hyperglycemia, one and 3 for the carbs, 4 units. So now she has to look at her next meal blood sugar and say, hey, what happened? Well, her next meal blood sugar came in at 69. So what does that tell her? Well, it tells her she might have overshot. Maybe she gave herself a little bit more insulin than she needed. Maybe the pizza was really worth only, 15 grams. We don't really know, but we know she just overshot a little bit. And that's what we do with our patients. We say, okay, let's do some detective work. Let's think backward to the morning to see what you ate, what insulin you took, and what was your activity level. Three things. Okay, so let's, for lunch, her blood sugar is 69. She had a ham sandwich. So that's two pieces of bread, 30 grams. A pear, 15 grams for the fruit, 45. Mini Snickers, we're just going to guess 15, so she's 60 grams. 4 units for the food, but she took away 1 unit since her blood sugar was 69 for a total of 3 units. Now she checks her blood sugar 2 hours after lunch. How did it come in? Right on the money, right? You know, it's, her target's 120, but she knows this is 2 hours after a meal, so it's a little bit higher than 120, but it's close enough because she's going to run track. So she knows when she goes to run track, she wants that number up a little bit, give her a little wiggle room. Before dinner, her blood sugar is 98. Is that at target? Yes, her target's 120, so she's very close to target. Now she has a cheeseburger, which is 2 pieces of bread, 2 servings, small fries, another serving maybe. So we're at 30, 45, and then chocolate chip cookie, maybe 30 grams. So I gave her 75 grams. She took 5 units, and she didn't take any extra insulin to correct. Let's look at her bedtime blood sugar, 173. And that's actually, 110 to 180 is a general place a lot of people like to go to bed with their blood sugars, especially if they're on intensive insulin therapy, and she took her 15 of Lantus. But I want to look at Cindy again. Let's look at her here, day one and day two. And these are pre-meal blood glucoses. And here's pre- and post-meal blood glucoses in the second row. The first row, we just have pre-meal blood sugars. And so during the exam, they might give you patterns to look at. And so I just want you to get familiar with patterns. So let's just do this together. Her blood sugar at breakfast is 99. She's at target. And she's going to eat 30 grams of carbohydrate. So how much insulin would she need for 30 grams? Yeah, 2 units. She takes one for every 15. And she doesn't need to adjust for her blood sugars because she's on target 99. Okay, let's see what happened at lunch. At lunch, before lunch, her blood sugar is 154. She's a little bit above her target of 122. And she's going to eat 75 grams. So 75 divided by 55. I'm sorry, that's not right. 75 grams of carbohydrate divided by 15. Right, because she takes 1 unit for every 15. It's 5 units. And so here you see she took 6. And you can imagine she was in a quandary because she's not 55 points above target. She's, 25 points above target or something like that. But she decided to go ahead and take 6 units anyway, just to take a little bit extra to make sure she's not too high. Let's see what she runs at dinner. 128. All right, very close to target. So now she's getting feedback. She did a great job. And then she's going to eat 60 grams of carbohydrate for lunch, or dinner, I'm sorry, 60 grams for dinner. So 60 divided by 15 is 4. She takes 4 units to cover for this carbohydrate, but for some reason she took 5 units of Humalog. Maybe she wanted her blood sugars down a little bit. I don't know. We don't really know why she did that, but patients do this all the time. They adjust things, and when I meet with them, I just say, hey, tell me a little bit more about why you adjusted that. I'm just curious. So from a place of curiosity, we ask them, and she might say, well, I was thinking maybe I was going to have a snack before I went to bed, so I wanted to cover it. But then you can see her blood sugar at bedtime is 69. This is a teaching moment to say, oh, maybe that was a little bit more insulin than you needed, so let's think about that next time. Okay, so she took 15, and this GL stands for glargine. How did she wake up? Well, her target, is 120, so she woke up higher than her target. She ate 45 grams of carbohydrate. She took 3 units of Humalog. So what happened 2 hours post-meal? She's 184, and that post-meal target is less than 180, so she's close. And then again, let's just take a look at lunch. 60 grams of carbohydrate. She took 4 units at 122, and then her lunch, post-lunch blood sugar 156, right on target. But look what happened here before dinner, 220. So she is going to eat 45 grams. She took 3 units for the 45 grams and added two more for hyperglycemia, and she came down a little bit lower than she wanted to after dinner. And then at bedtime, she was at 228, and you might wonder, why did she go to 228? Well, I'm thinking she was hungry, so she ate some carbohydrates here. And so this is kind of a day in the life of a person on intensive insulin therapy trying to get blood sugars to target, and you can see how challenging it can be and how they need a lot of coaching and problem solving and support from us. And in the last webcast, I was asked, you know, I asked a poll question, and I said, if John says, I don't want to start insulin, what is our best response? And the best response was to ask him, tell me why you don't want to start on insulin. And I think that's a really good place to be with patients, where you say to them, I'm really curious, I'm concerned about you. Can you tell me, you know, more about what happened here? Or can you explain what happened, you know, between dinner and bedtime? Or tell me why you don't want to go on insulin. I really want to know. And that is a really nice way to approach it, because then you're engaging them in the problem solving and the question and answer, and really gathering their support and showing them a genuine interest. So asking those type of questions is always okay. Of course, you're going to get information back from patients as far as privacy and their body language, but I think the more interested we are in their daily life and what's working and not working for them, and you know, letting them know we're not going to judge, it really, really helps a lot. Really helps a lot. I mean, I think I mentioned this last time, but when I meet with patients, I look at their blood glucose logs. The first thing I always say is, I am really impressed with all the great work you are doing. So give them a lot of credit for the work they're doing, because it's not easy. And then help them do problem solving around their blood sugars. And so I'd like to launch one final poll. And how are you feeling about your preparation for the exam? Are you feeling really confident, pretty confident, okay, need to keep studying, or not sure? Okay. I wish we could have like a post boot camp party where we all get together and I could meet all of you. I feel like I know a lot of you already, and just, you know, share stories about the exam. But of course, after the exam, you're going to have to let me know how it went, because I will really, really want to know how things are going, how things went. And, you know, sometimes after the exam, people will contact me and let me know just ideas about what was on the exam. So I pay it forward. I always share it with all of you. So I like to share this. 21% of you said, I'm pretty confident. 68%, okay, need to keep studying. And that's a good place to be, actually. And some of you aren't sure, because that need, so the anxiety or the feeling I need to keep studying will help you succeed. So the fact that you're joining this boot camp, the fact that you're participating in this webcast, you know, the fact that you're studying when we're not together, I know this increases your chance of success. And the fact that you're taking tests and reading through this material, all of this is increasing your success of this exam. So I really want to let you know that there's a lot of people who don't participate in this type of, you know, learning and educational format, and it's harder for them. And the fact that we're kind of helping you focus on what to study, I think is helpful. And the fact that you're a self-starter, that you wanted to join this webcast, already puts you a little bit ahead. So I want to congratulate all of you for taking the time to make this happen. And I'm going to look, somebody else has a question for me. Oh, Alana. Okay, you guys like the party idea. And Alana lives in Hawaii. And she goes, that would be great. All are invited to my house in, Kailua, Hawaii. I don't know if I said that right, but I'm hoping I got an approximation to it. That would be fun. And here's another thought I didn't tell you all yet, is that take the exam someplace you've always wanted to go, and maybe you've already signed up, but I did take my exam. Oh, I said it right. Good, thank you. I did take my exam 7 years ago in Hawaii, and after I took my exam, I went to the beach and I ordered a drink, an adult drink with an umbrella in it, and I just put my feet up and I said, job well done. And I want to just say that to all of you, that job well done, that you're here and really trying to make it happen. Okay, so Kathy Ann has a question. Do you have to memorize correction bolus? So they would tell you what a correction bolus is. They would say, Jonna has type 1 diabetes. She takes one unit for every 50 above her target. How much insulin would she need? So you would never have to memorize a correction bolus. They would just include it in the case study or the question. So you would never have to memorize that. They would provide that information. You might have to do math to figure out how much insulin she would need. So if there's any math involved, just really, I'm going to say the same thing a lot of times. Get a pen and paper out and do it, because when you have anxiety going, you know, it's easy to make mistakes. The other thing I want to suggest to all of you when you take this exam is get up and move a lot during this exam. I think I mentioned that, but it's worth saying again. It's a long exam, up to 4 hours. So get up, move, stretch, do any type of brain activity you can where you cross over right, left. any movement where you cross your body over to the right, left, like practice the Macarena while you're doing it, really helps activate your brain. And the other thing you might want to do is stand with your hands on your hip for 2 minutes. That helps increase your testosterone levels and lower your adrenaline so you can be more present and focused. So if you're feeling nervous and you're feeling your heart pumping, stand up, put your hands on your hips for 2 minutes, breathe deeply. It will help calm you down. Anxiety is great because it helps us to study and it helps us to prepare for things. But when the anxiety is so intense that you're feeling your heart beating fast, it's harder to access information from your brain. So you want to just calm down, be present and focused. Okay, well, I'm going to stop recording, but this time I'm going to stay with you and answer any other questions.